As I looked at my schedule and saw that this was going to be a Lord's Table day, and as I'm going through series, I don't want to leave my series most of the time because we're having Lord's Table once a month on Sunday morning. And the topic is judgment. And I thought, is that a Lord's Table topic? And then I thought, well, yes, because Paul says, let a man so examine himself. And so as we come to this text this morning, and as we are preparing our hearts at this time for the table that's before us, that we are going to be inviting each other, inviting ourselves to participate at this table, I think we have to ask ourselves, how does this text and how does this concept of God judging his people, how does it apply to us? Ezekiel chapter 1 begins with Ezekiel as a captive along a canal outside of Babylon in the area of Kibar. There along that canal was where the Jews were living. And while living there, God gave Ezekiel a vision of himself. He saw visions of God and he saw the glory of God. He saw God in his wonder, in his awesomeness, in his brightness, in his power. And as Ezekiel saw God's glory, it made him fall to his face. The Spirit of God pulled Ezekiel to his feet and said, Ezekiel, I'm going to have you be a watchman. I'm going to have you be a warner of the people of Israel. And they were not going to listen to you. But as a watchman, it is not your job to make them listen. It's your job to give the message. And whether they listen or whether they won't listen, that's not your problem. But it is your job, your responsibility to give the message. And then I believe in chapters 4 and 5, we have four different pictures of the coming judgment. So to put really the first half of the book of Ezekiel in a proper context, we must never forget that Ezekiel is in Babylon, yet the message is to Ezekiel and the rest of Israel about what God is going to do back in Jerusalem. So whatever we do or do not understand from these texts, remember this, that the primary message, the first message of this text was to Ezekiel to give to the Jews in Babylon about what was going to happen in Israel. Now you say, well, how does that affect, if he's preaching to these people about these people, what good is that? Well, obviously he wanted these people to learn something. And so even though this, again, is not directly about us, and yet I think there's something we can learn. I think every day Ezekiel got up and he went to the market. And when he got to the market, he started doing some weird things to get the people's attention. Early in chapter 4, we find the sign of the siege. He built a clay city and it looked like Jerusalem. He built Jerusalem there in the market, I think on a big building tile or some kind of a library-like tile in the clay. He built a picture of Jerusalem, and then he put army guys around it, and he besieged the city. He wanted the people in Babylon to know the fact of the siege, that there was going to be a judgment coming to Jerusalem. It wasn't like a parent who might say, if you go play on Johnson Street, you might get hit by a truck. That's something that might happen if you play on Johnson Street. No, this was a sure thing. The fact is that God was going to judge Israel. Then we saw in chapter 4 the sign of the days, that God was going to judge Israel for every year they sinned. I believe for every year of their rebellion, there was going to be another day of the siege of the city of Jerusalem. That's what I think as I see those 390 days on one side and 40 days on another side. Then there was the sign of the defiled bread, that Ezekiel was going to eat this crude homemade bread cooked over buffalo chips. And that was to show the severity of the siege, that judgment was going to be both painful and personal to those that they knew that were back there in Jerusalem. The people in Babylon weren't so far removed from Jerusalem. It had only been half a dozen years, and they knew the people that were still back there. And so to think about their cousins and their friends and the people back in Jerusalem undergoing the siege was going to be a traumatic thing to those in Babylon, or it should have been. And then the sign of Ezekiel's hair. That was supposed to show the results of the siege, that all of the people living in Jerusalem would be affected. A third of them would die in the famine. A third would die in the war that would surround the city. Another third would be chased helter-skelter all over the world. And that God was going to have a sword that would follow them too. And yet there would still be a remnant that God would pull back to Jerusalem. I believe what goes on in the rest of chapter 5 and 6 and even into chapter 7 is a record of Ezekiel's prayers, preaching. If you want to know while he was doing these weird things, what he was saying, it's the rest of chapter 5, chapter 6, and now in chapter 7. Chapter 7 is a poem. Many of your translations, you probably picked that up. It's set up differently than the others because it was a poem that was written. And as so many times is true in poetry, there is repetition to show you the idea. I'm gonna say something again. I'm going to say it a little differently. I'm going to say it in another stanza. The whole idea is so that we can pick up on a theme. And I think it's pretty easy to pick up some themes here, and that's going to be the points that we're going to dwell on this morning. Notice the title, and I think the title starts back. You can see the theme of this. Seven times we find the same phrase. Look at the chapter 6. Come back with me to chapter 6, verse 7. The slain shall fall in your midst, and you shall know that I am the Lord. Then in chapter 10, it begins, and they shall know that I am the Lord. Verse 13 of chapter 6. Then you shall know that I am the Lord. The very last phrase of chapter 6, the end of verse 14. Then they shall know that I am the Lord. Four times, and not just a few verses of that chapter. Then that continues in the poem. Look at chapter 7, verse 4. Then you shall know that I am the Lord. Chapter 7, verse 9. Then you shall know that I am the Lord who strikes. And then the last verse of this poem, at the end of verse 27. Then they shall know that I am the Lord. Obviously, the title of this poem and the thesis or the theme that Ezekiel, God is trying to give a message to the people there in Babylon, about those in Jerusalem, about them in Babylon. You in Babylon are going to know this, and the people in Jerusalem are going to know this, and what you're going to know is that I'm the Lord. So I think we have a poem here with this title, Then They Shall Know That I Am the Lord. As we look at some of the things that are repeated here, notice all the references to time. Maybe you picked that up while Randy was reading. Right away in verse 2, an end. The end has come. Now the end has come. Down in verse 5, behold, it has come. An end has come. The end has come. It has dawned for you. Behold, it has come. The time has come. And in verse 7, a day of trouble is near. Verse 8. Now upon you, I will soon pour out my fury. Verse 10, behold, the day, it has come. Verse 12, the time has come. The day draws near. Again and again, he talks about how soon this thing is going to happen. So my number one, if you will, this morning is know that God's patience ends. And he judges on particular days. There's a time when something's going to happen. You look at other prophetic books, Daniel chapter 12, Revelation chapter 10, both similar passage. And in those two texts, it talks about God saying, that's it, time's up. It's done. From now on, the time has ended, and this is going to happen. And God, of course, starts the second half of the tribulation, what I believe is a period of 3.5 years, 42 months, 1,260 days. He times that out very much, both in the book of Daniel, chapter 12, and also in Revelation, chapters 10, 13, 10, 11, 12, 13. You see that timing. It's God saying, enough, enough. I've had enough. You ever hear that or hear yourself say that when you're dealing with your children? Sounds a little bit like an exasperated parent, doesn't it? I try to remember that I should judge my children according to right, not according to my exasperation level. But it is somewhat comforting to know that in this case, God says, enough. I've had enough. It's going to stop now. Whatever mercy you are getting is done. I think this is important for us to know. That as we have sin in our life, let a man examine himself. That's why we're here today. As we have sin in our life, we sometimes think, things are going well. Life is going well. I'm married. I've got a job. My kids don't hate my guts. The things are going fairly well. Therefore, whatever sin I have must not really be a problem with God. Paul says that we shouldn't deceive ourselves that way. I'm reading the NIV from Romans chapter 2, verses 3 and 5. Paul writes this, "Do you think that you will escape God's judgment? Or do you show contempt for the riches of his kindness, forbearance and patience, not realizing that God's kindness is intended to lead you to repentance? But because of your stubbornness and your unrepentant heart, you are storing up wrath against yourself for the day of God's wrath, when his righteous judgment will be revealed." We need to know that God's patience ends and he judges on particular days. That God will say at some point, it's enough. This personal God that we have, he's not some computer out there, but rather he's a personal God, and he becomes agitated and says, enough. I think the second thing we should know, not only that God's patience ends, but we need to know that God is angry. God is angry. We don't like to know that. We don't like to think that about God. Notice who he's angry at. That's there in verse 2 where he says, "And you, son of man, thus says the Lord God, to the land of Israel." So I'm preaching to those people there. And he makes it very personal. Notice what he says in verse 3. "Now the end has come upon you, and I will send my anger against you." Down in verse 8. "Now upon you I will soon pour out my fury. I will spend my anger," he says in verse 8. Verse 12, at the end of the verse, "For wrath is on their whole multitude." Verse 14, towards the end, "For my wrath is on their whole multitude." Over in verse 19, about the middle of the verse, "Their silver and their gold will not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord." Israel, especially you pick this up in Jesus' day, they always like to brag about who they were. Jonah did this, remember? When God was judging Jonah by the storm, he brags to the other mariners. He says to them, "Hey, I'm an Israelite. I'm somebody important." And they did this in Jesus' day too. That, "Hey, we are Abraham's children. We're part of the heirs of the Abrahamic covenant." The Israelites like to boast of their great temple. They like to boast about Moses' law, that they were wiser and better than the rest. Because after all, look what they had. They thought things were okay and that God must be pleased with them because of who they were. But here was Ezekiel telling them that God was angry with them. I think sometimes there's that same kind of self-delusion going on among evangelicals, among Baptists. "Hey, I said a prayer when I was 9 years old. That means I'm going to heaven because I said that prayer. That means I'm God's child. That means I can get away with anything because after all, I know I'm eternally secure." We Baptists know that. And therefore, I can do it. And you know, we're accused of that by other evangelical faiths that don't believe you can keep your salvation, that believe salvation can be lost. My stepmom grew up Nazarene, and she had a good friend who, when she told her good friend that she was going to marry my dad, basically this friend told her she was going to hell for marrying a Baptist. But the reason was because she grew up, Bertie, with the idea that if you believe that you're eternally secure, that must mean you want to do all kinds of wicked things. Well, I will grant this, that there's many people, just like a Lutheran may look to their infant baptism and say, "Hey, that happened to me, therefore I know I'm going to heaven, I'm God's child." So I think there's a lot of people who grew up in Baptist churches that say, "Hey, I went to Awana, I said a prayer once, and therefore I know I'm going to heaven. Therefore it doesn't matter, because I've got fire insurance." Now, I'm sorry. Here were God's people. And I think we caught this from the book of Hebrews. Remember in the book of Hebrews, as we read that, there were five warnings. And I believe all those warnings were to God's people. To find out whether or not you're in the faith by doing the right things, by living a godly life, and knowing that if you're not doing the right things, and that if you're not living a godly life, that you have no assurance, that there's no proof of your salvation except that you would be Christ-like. Except that God be perfecting you, that he may be working in you. Not that we are perfect in this life, but that God would be drawing us, that God would be creating in us, continuing to create in us a new heart, a new species, a new creation. That we would be different, that we would be a different race, because we are God's, we are his people. And so here were these Israelites saying, hey, you know, we're Abrahamic seed. I could trace my lineage all the way back. You bet, all the way back to Abraham. And we got the temple. There it is, right there. See that beautiful building? And we still read the Word of God every Sunday morning, or Saturday in their case. We still read this. Therefore, God must still love us. No, Ezekiel has a different message. God's ticked. God's angry. And he's angry at Israel. We'll find out exactly whether he's angry at Israel in the next one. God is going to judge. Number three, know that God is judging according to the sins of his people. He says, I've got specific things. This is no just arbitrary or haphazard thing. Notice at the end of verse 3, I will judge you according to your ways. I will repay you for all your abominations. Verse 4, but I will repay your ways, and your abominations will be in your midst. The end of verse 8, I will judge you according to your ways. I will repay you for all your abominations. Verse 9, I will repay you according to your ways, and your abominations will be in your midst. Verse 20, about halfway down, their images of their abominations, their detestable things. Oh, I skipped one. At the end of verse 16, all of them mourning each for his own iniquity. Verse 23, make a chain. The land is filled with crimes of blood, and the city is full of violence. God is thinking of some specific things here. In the middle of verse 27, I will do to them according to their way. Know that when God judges you, know that when God is angry, he has specific things in mind. He knows what he doesn't like, and we often know what he doesn't like, and yet we don't change our attitude. We don't change our way. Let a man examine himself. That's why we're here today at this table. Let a man examine ourselves whether we should participate at this table. Know that God judges according to the sins of his people. We know we sin. We know we sin all the time. And we know that we are the benefit of an ocean of mercy. It says, Rory led us in our music this morning. An ocean of mercy is there. And we know that's necessary. If it wasn't for that ocean of mercy, we would all be in hell. So we know we are the beneficiaries of a huge amount of mercy that's coming our way endlessly. But let us never grow calloused consciences. Never get the idea that we are beyond the judgments of God. Let us never make the mistake of thinking that God is soft, or God is weak, or that God is absent-minded. God is not some old man with a large belly who doles out candy to all children, whether they are good ones or bad ones. No. Know this, that God is angry, and he's ticked specifically at his people for the sin that they harbor in their hearts. And know this, number four, that no one escapes. This is the poem. The poem titled, They Shall Know That I Am the Lord. And what did God want his people to know? He wanted them to know that his patience was going to end. He wanted his people to know that God was angry with them. He wanted them to know that God was going to judge them according to the specific things that they did. And he also wanted them to know that no one escapes. No one escapes when God decides to judge. Notice in verse 2, he says right away, the four corners, all the land, all you that dwell in the land. Verse 11. He says that none of them shall remain, none of the multitude, none of them. Nobody's going to get out of this. Verse 15, whoever's in the field will die by the sword. Whoever's in the city, famine and pestilence will devour him. It doesn't matter where you live, you're going to be part of this judgment. Verse 18, shame will be on every face, baldness on all their heads. Verse 27, the king will mourn, the prince will be clothed with desolation. The hand of the common people will tremble. It doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter what status you are or have. Everybody's going to be included in this, he says, when God decides to judge. I think some of us like to think it won't happen to us. We can sin. We can go on our merry way. We can have the wrong things going on in our homes. And we're going to slip through the cracks. I think starting in verse 10, as we go through the rest of this chapter, there are several illustrations of how this judgment is going to be fleshed out. Notice in verse 10 and 11, it's the illustration of a budding rod. When a tree buds, know this, that soon the fruit is going to set on there. It's coming. Then in verses 12 through 14, he talks about the, or 12 and 13 rather, he talks about the illustration of the uselessness of commerce. There's going to be people buying and selling, but what good is it to buy and what good is it to sell when it's all going to be destroyed? I mean, you got a lot of stuff, so you're going to sell it so you can have a lot of money, and then the enemy comes and he takes all your money away. Or you got money and you need stuff, so you're going to buy the stuff, and then the enemy comes and burns all your stuff. But it doesn't really matter, does it? Whether you're the buyer or the seller, you're the loser when the enemy comes and when judgment comes. Verses 14 to 18 speak of military favor, failure, that the military is going to fall apart. Verse 19 speaks of economic failure. Verses 20 to 22, and this had to be a bit of a shock to them, the temple. There's going to be Gentiles living in the temple. And we're going to come back to this theme again and again as we look at the next dozen or so chapters of the book of Ezekiel, that the temple's going to be destroyed. Nebuchadnezzar has already come to Israel twice. And twice he has deported people. Twice he's conquered the city. And both times he's left behind the desire of their eyes. Both times he's left behind this beautiful temple that was built by Solomon. Now Ezekiel is saying, the Gentiles are going to dwell there. The Gentiles are going to destroy this. Verses 23 to 27 speak of the complete inability of both religious and government leadership in Israel to provide any help. There's nothing that anybody's going to do, to be able to do to fix this. This chapter was completely fulfilled. Everything that God prophesies here in 4, 5, 6, 7, these chapters is completely fulfilled in just a few years. So what? How does this apply to us today? That God would warn us that people in the last days before God, before Christ comes, that we should be wary of judgment. I think there's two texts that I want us to look at that allude to this. Come with me first. Let's look at 2 Timothy first. 2 Timothy chapter 3, I'm going to read these couple of texts and then remind us, and then the sermon's done and we'll go into the Lord's table. 2 Timothy chapter 3, I begin with verse 1. Know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. And from such people turn away, for of this sort are those who creep into households and make captives of gullible women, loaded down with sins, led away by various lusts, always learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Now as Jannes and Jambres resisted Moses, so do these also resist the truth, men of corrupt minds, disapproved concerning the faith. But they will progress no further, for their folly will be manifest to all, as theirs also was, as Jannes and Jambres also was. Know this, in the last times, perilous times are going to come. And don't be with these kind of people. Turn away from these kind of people, he says. And come with me to the book of James. James chapter 5. And again, I think he speaks of the last days and things that are going on and how God's people should respond to some of these things. He says, turn away in 2 Timothy chapter 3. Now look at me with me at James chapter 5. Come now, you rich. You think you got it all? Weep and howl for your miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches are corrupted. Your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver are corroded, and their corrosion will be a witness against you and will eat your flesh like fire. You've heaped up treasure in the last days. Indeed, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out. And the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of the Sabbath. You have lived on the earth in pleasure and luxury. You have fattened your hearts as in a day of slaughter. You have condemned, you have murdered the just. He does not resist you. Therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until he receives the early and latter rain. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. I realize I'm putting together some things, more than one sermon when I went through the book of James in this text. But I think it's here. In the last days, there's going to be people that are surrounded by stuff that abuse poor people. There's going to be people who only care about themselves. And in these kind of times, we should hang on to God. We need to be patient, as knowing that God is going to come and set things right. So how do we apply this? Rory and I sometimes have conversations about the fact that dispensationalists like to say they're dispensationalists, and we like to say, well, this is for Israel and this is for the church. We like to make sure that we know, everybody knows, that there's a difference between Israel and the church. And then we take, as we're preaching to the church, we take these Israeli texts that are about Israel, like this one in Ezekiel, and we just wham, shove it into the church. I don't want to do that. And yet, I also believe it's the same God. And if God was angry at his people for their sin in Ezekiel's day, is not that same God one who would warn us in the book of Hebrews, one that would judge us about how to behave in these perilous days in James and 2 Timothy? As we think about God's attitude towards his people and how angry he was with them and telling them, stop doing that stuff or I will repay you according to how you behave. Is not that applicable to us? We cannot do whatever we want. We belong to him. What? Don't you know that your body is the temple of God? You've been bought with a price. There's consequences for our sin. Sometimes life-altering consequences that don't go away. What did God want his people to know? He wanted his people to know that his patience was at an end. He wanted his people to know that he was angry, that he was ticked at them. He wanted his people to know that he was going to judge them according to his sin. He wanted his people to know that no one escapes when he determines to judge. He wanted his people to know that he is the Lord. That he is the Lord. That he is God. It's a sober text. It ought to be. It ought to be.